It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Thanks for tuning in this weekend to Let's Talk Portland, Odyssey Portland's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gary Bloxham. On the show this time, I'd like to welcome Matthew Hushbeck, Assistant Director of Development, and Quinn Reed, Conservation Director with Portland Audubon. Hey guys, welcome to Let's Talk Portland.
Thanks for having us. Good to be here.
Thank you for having us back, Gary.
Sure. So I think, Matthew, we should get started with you and maybe have you explain to our listeners what Portland Audubon is and some of the history.
Sure. So Portland Audubon is a grassroots environmental conservation organization. We have a wide array of programs from our conservation work, our wildlife rehabilitation, environmental education programs, and sanctuary management throughout the organization. And we were founded in 1902 as the Oregon Audubon Society, and we continue to be a statewide organization, even though our name is Portland Audubon. And part of that founding was with the goal of protecting birds and wildlife throughout the state. And our founders, William Finley and Henry Bowman, were famous photographers who went out and took photos of wildlife, and those photos, along with their advocacy work, helped inspire the president to name three arch rocks as a national monument.
Oh, cool.
And then they were also very active in protecting Malheur Wildlife Refuge and the Malheur Lake. And that's something that we continue to see for the organization. In more modern times, we've been led through our continued work with our activists, our members, and our supporters, and having great conservation directors like Bob Salinger and Mike Houck really set a vision and protect both our urban spaces, our forests, our coasts, and just all across the state doing incredible work. And we're really excited now to welcome Quinn Reed as our new conservation director. And so that is really a lot about what the work is that we're doing and how we're making an impact for everybody throughout the state and inspiring everyone to protect Oregon's wildlife and wild places.
I think that people probably heard the word the Audubon Society. Is there a difference between Portland Audubon and the Audubon Society, or are they... What does that mean?
So we're a part of a national chapter service. So there's about 450 chapters within the Audubon Society, the National Audubon Society.
Okay.
We're an independent organization in Oregon. We have our own priorities within the state. We really focus on state issues, making sure we're building up climate resiliency, creating those educational opportunities and doing that work. But all of our members and all of our supporters are used in additional advocacy work that's going on at the federal level so that we are making sure that we're protecting birds throughout the entire state and throughout the entire world, because birds are migratory. They're going to be coming through Oregon. They're going to be going north, south all the time. So,
well, we just had that with the swifts, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's so cool. So you guys are based in Portland, but you do the whole state of Oregon.
That's right. It's a bit of a misnomer being Portland Audubon. We are indeed statewide and have been for a very long time.
Cool. Yeah, very cool. So, Matthew, tell us about some of the education is a large part of what you do. So let's talk about some of the programs and initiatives with Portland Audubon.
Over the last 4 years, we've really seen a big evolution to our education programs. And that's a lot in part to our incredible education director, Emily Pinkowitz. And some of those programs that have evolved, many people have participated in a Portland Audubon camp throughout their lives. One of the things that we introduced was having sliding scale camps, so people can pay anywhere between 10% of the cost of camps, which the normal cost of camps is $500, so as low as $52. And then families can pay up to 125% to make sure that there's additional support going to make sure that we're able to offer those programs and make our camps more accessible and affordable for everybody to participate in. And that includes summer camps, spring and winter camps. In addition, we have our Green Leaders program, which is in partnership with Hacienda CDC and Verde. We hire 8 youth from Hacienda CDC, ages 15 to 19, to be youth educators. They come to Portland Audubon, get trained in environmental education, and then they go back and take that education training and provide classes for the community at Hacienda CDC on their sites. And a lot of that work is really tied into our conservation work. So we do have like native planting days where not just the youth that are participating in the program, but their families get to get engaged in those, in that work, and learn about the importance of native plants and the interconnectedness, as well as enhancing the Hacienda CDC properties with and expanding our wildlife corridors. We also offer outdoor school in partnership with various schools throughout the year, and that includes up at Marmot Cabin, which is one of our 3 sanctuaries. We have 2 30-person yurts up there, so we have kids throughout the year getting the opportunity to connect, but those programs really work based off of what the appropriate curriculum is for the students and what the school's looking for, whether it's overnight camps like that or if it's day programming. And then in addition to that, we do have our adult education programs. That includes classes and eco tours. And one of the things that we learned from the pandemic was having the opportunity to introduce virtual and in-person classes are a great way for us to connect. As we are a statewide organization, we want to make sure that we're accessible to everybody. And we also are making sure that with those online courses for people that aren't able to travel for classes, that they're able to get that connection and that inspiration and love for nature and that connection there. So we have also been introducing during the summer free programming to our Bird Days of Summer program. So everyone can come in and have the chance to go learn about birding throughout and really get involved and engage and make it accessible to all. And then one of the biggest things that we do also is creating programs that are birding in community so that diverse communities have safe spaces where they're able to go out into nature and bird and feel comfortable and welcome. Finally, we do have a variety of different events that we regularly do throughout the year, including the Swift Watch, which we partnered with Chapman School 20 plus years ago to help them get a heating system at their school, because we found that the Vox's Swifts were staying inside of the big chimney there. And so every year you can now come out in September and see all of the Vox's Swifts, anywhere from 7,000 to 12,000 a night as they're migrating south. We have our Nature Night programs, which are from September through April, just on various different environmental subjects, and that's a completely free program. And we also are about to start our Christmas bird count and helping in a community science way identify how species are doing within our backyards. So,
and birds kind of migrate like clockwork, don't they?
Yes.
That's amazing to me.
Yes.
We're talking today with Portland Audubon. Matthew Hushbeck is the Assistant Director of Development. And let me introduce Quinn Reed once again, Conservation Director. Hey, Quinn.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you're kind of new. Well, you're brand new to Portland Audubon.
A whopping 3 months, not even. Yes.
So how's it going so far? What do you think? And what's your background?
Yeah, no, it's going well. Again, it's sort of amazing when I think about 3 months. That feels like, on one hand, a really long time, and also no time at all. But, you know, Portland Audubon has always loomed large for me in my conservation career. I actually got started when I was 16. I desperately wanted to do something for the environment. I could not have told you exactly what it was, but I was scared and anxious about the state of things and wanted to do something. So I cold called a bunch of organizations and ended up volunteering with the lovely people at Tahoma Audubon Society, which is up in Tacoma. And I was mentored by the great Thelma Gilmer, who really showed me what it looked like to be a lifelong advocate and activist for the environment, showed me that it was really possible. And, you know, it wasn't a straight line from Tahoma Audubon Society to now, but my experience in that community, the generosity of that community planted a seed, right? You know, that I came back to many years later. So for the last decade, I've been here in Oregon and I've worked for both state and national conservation organizations, mostly with a focus on state wildlife policy and protecting habitat. So when this opportunity opened up with Portland Audubon, I was really excited. You know, over the years, I'd done a lot of work with Portland Audubon's incredible staff. So this was a chance to work directly with them and be part of this. So some of the things I was really excited about, again, I mentioned community. It's that, right? Everything that Matthew was talking about. It's, you know, our education team, there's, if you go up to our campus, there's always kids around, especially during the summer, during our camp season. There's volunteers of all ages. There's, and people are volunteering in the care center. They are getting involved and providing testimony at the legislature or the Fish and Wildlife Commission. People are just deeply involved and care so much. And it's a real privilege to be able to be part of that. I think it's something that's really unique to Portland Audubon. And, you know, it's been here for over a century. And over that time has really cultivated a special place in Portland and around the state and has just built up this, I think, really special network of people who are deeply committed to protecting birds, to nature, and making sure that people have access to nature for their entire lives. You know, the other piece of it I think that's especially exciting to me is that education focus. You know, that's another thing that's unique. Education permeates everything that we do at Portland Audubon. And it's lifelong, right? We're invested in every stage of a person's conservation or nature education. And I am a personal, you know, testament to what a difference that can make, right? I mean, I keep looking around and I'm like, oh, what are these kids going to do, you know, later on in their lives? How is this going to impact how they see the world and how they equip themselves out in the world? So that to me was really exciting. And when I think about the conservation work that I'm doing, which of course is more advocacy focused, I'm really excited about tying in that education piece, right? Doing more to educate and empower our existing activist base and to grow that base, to be more inclusive, bring more young folks out there and get them out there to advocate on behalf of our wild things and wild places. So all of that is what brought me here and is what is giving me energy.
Yeah. You seem very enthusiastic about your new job.
I am, honestly. I mean, I'm also
that's wonderful.
Possibly lack of sleep as well, but you know, it's been wonderful. I'm really happy to be here.
What are some of the conservation priorities here in Portland?
Well, gosh, you know, this is another thing I'm excited about. You know, a lot of my background is in the statewide wildlife policy and habitat protection work, but Portland Audubon has this great focus on urban conservation as well and has a really robust urban conservation program. You know, our vision is to be the greenest metropolitan area in the country. And certainly, I think we've got a good start on that.
Yeah, I think so.
But there's a lot to that. You know, have you seen when you've been out and about just strolling around your neighborhood, the backyard habitat certification programs.
I have dozens of them in my neighborhood. Well, maybe not dozens, but I have quite a few.
That program is an exciting one, which, by the way, just exceeded 11,000 enrolled members.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive. But that's a program run by Portland Audubon and Columbia Land Trust. And again, a great way to bring people into the movement and show how we're all a part of connecting these spaces and creating green spaces that can be used by certainly wildlife, by birds, but also help create more climate resilient communities for all of us. So that's a big part of our urban conservation work. We're also trying to do a lot of community-led work to find opportunities where we can support work being done by communities. And that includes the recent passage of PSEF, right? $750 million for climate-focused community-led work. So it includes things like advocating for our wetlands. It includes things like making sure that our building standards are bird safe. You know, you might be surprised to learn that a huge percentage of the patients we get in the care center are there because they have collided with windows. So things like making sure that building standards as we increase development are done in a way that are safe for birds. You know, it's weighing in on housing issues, which are extraordinarily complicated, extraordinarily emotional. But we want to make sure that as we are meeting the state's urgent need for affordable housing, we're also holding our, you know, hard-fought, hard-won environmental protections harmless, that we're really thinking long-term about affordability, absolutely, but also climate resilience. How do we make sure that as we grow, that people are able to live in safe, thriving, truly livable, complete communities where they have access to nature? So that's just a little sample of our urban work.
So compared to the rest of the United States, how do you think Portland and the Pacific Northwest fares as far as environmental concerns go?
Gosh.
Seems like we're doing pretty good up here.
You know, I think certainly it's in our public consciousness to a great degree, and something that makes our lives a little bit easier. People think of it. It's something that draws people to our community, right? People want to be here because of our protections for the environment, because we do have communities with thriving green spaces where people do have access to nature. So we just want to make sure that as we move forward, we're not losing sight of the very things that bring people here. And more importantly, making sure that everyone has access to those things that make this place such a great place to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned it just a second ago, but I want to hear more about the Wildlife Care Center. Tell me more about that.
Oh, yes, the Wildlife Care Center. And for those who don't know, this is our Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, and it's located up at our sanctuary on Cornell. So please come visit, come see our nature store, walk the trails at the sanctuary, and take a look at where the rehab center is. But this is an incredible facility, and every year our rehabbers there respond to thousands of phone calls from the community and treat thousands of patients, birds and other wildlife. And mostly those animals are brought in by, you know, Good Samaritans, people in the community who have encountered an injured animal. You know, this week there was a garter snake that had been stepped on. You know, sometimes it's a bald eagle, right? A lot of times it's birds that have come into conflict with cats. And on the landscape, it's, like I said earlier, it's birds that have collided with windows. So we're providing direct support to the community and obviously to those individual animals, rehabilitating them whenever they're possible and releasing them back out into nature. But I think the other really important aspect of that work is the community education. What does it mean to live in a city where we have wildlife? Because we really do. We have these incredible urban ecosystems. It's easy to lose sight of that. You know, we get going and throughout our lives, we're in our cars, we're going into our buildings. But if you stop for a second and you listen and you look, you see that we share the space with so much life. There's so much beyond us. And it's really about understanding that and respecting that and giving people a way to, I think, take some ownership and responsibility for sharing the landscape.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one thing that's always so inspiring is being down in the city and looking up at Forest Park, right?
Yes.
And that's like, wow, we're this close to nature.
Yes. You know,
even though we're in a kind of a concrete area, we're this close.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's so great. Well, let me introduce Matthew Heschbeck again, Assistant Director of Development with Portland Audubon. You have one of your big fundraisers on the way. It's about a month away, mid-November?
Yeah, it's coming up November 18th and 19th. It's the Wild Arts Festival. It's a celebration of the connection of art and nature. And when I talk about that, I think back to William Finley and taking those photographs and how those photographs had such an important impact on our landscapes. And I also think about just this weekend, I was visiting someone picking up some items that they were donating for the Wild Arts Festival. She was a widow. Her recently passed husband had carved a 3.5 foot tall sandhill crane, and it was absolutely gorgeous. And he's carved birds for all of his life, and it's just such an important thing. And he's sharing those out with his family and friends. And now she wanted to make sure that he was able to promote his avid love of birding out with the community and make sure that this crane found a wonderful home. And that's those little connections that really inspire us all to want to be a protecting nature and want to be out in nature and engage. So this is that celebration. It's a chance to find those different items. And at the Wild Arts Festival, we have 60 different artists with a variety of different art styles, from metalwork to woodworking to painting and 2D design, as well as photography and ceramics. So there's a lot of different elements to it. And it's always making sure that those designs and that artwork is nature inspired, that it's sustainable, and that we incorporate all of our mission and our values in there. In addition, we're going to have 20 different authors at the event as well. And some of those artists and authors, so it's the cover artist that we have, Sheila Evans. She's an avid birder. She goes out and actually takes the photographs of the birds that she's going to later paint, whether it's pastel, oil painting, or kiln-fired enamel design, which are these beautiful art pieces and just lovely birds painted on there. It's we're bringing back longtime Wild Arts Festival participants like Gunter Remnitz, who does metalwork sculptures, and he makes these wonderful crows, and he couldn't be at the festival last year and he was devastated, but he's so excited to be back. And like I said, it's about making sure that it's sustainable. So we have Gavin Tuffer, who is a woodworker who's always making sure that he has sustainably sourced lumber, reclaimed wood, and other more organic materials in his designs as he's making wood birdhouses and some other intricate designed woodwork for the house. And then it's also making sure that there's something for everyone. You know, the Wild Arts Festival, it's a chance to get something for yourself or for somebody else during the holidays. And so we have like Ann Kavanaugh, who's a glasswork artist and does these really gorgeous glass pieces. But she also brings just the pieces that she's not using in her art, and you can sell them. And she sells those for a lower price, where they're very affordable. And all throughout the day when you're walking through the festival, all you do is hear the excitement of the glass just clinking as people are going through and sorting it out cool. to see what that right piece is. And then the authors, I mean, you talked about how wonderful Forest Park is. We have Marcy Cottrell Howell, who has just published a book, Forest Park, Exploring Portland's Natural Sanctuary. So, you know, it's those pieces. We have Stephanie Shaw, who's published All By Myself, which is a popular award-winning children's book that takes her readers on a journey to discover nature, independence, and kindness. And then I think we'll all appreciate this one. We have Jack Costa, who has a wine hiking Oregon book. So you can go find the best
wine hiking. I'm
30
into that.
Hikes in Oregon, and they will all lead you to a different vineyard at celebrating just all of the greatness of Oregon. And I think after this interview, I'm going to go take one of those hikes myself.
Birds and nature and wine, I'm in.
Absolutely.
Great combo.
So, yeah, the event is at the Viking Pavilion at Portland State on November 18th and 19th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The authors are there in rotating shifts from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m.
18th and 19th, is that a Saturday, Sunday?
It is a Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, not looking at my calendar, so. Where can people get a preview?
They can get a preview at wildartsfestival.org. They can also purchase tickets there. And you can purchase tickets in person or online. And the price for the tickets are all the same. And if you've been to the Wild Arts Festival before, we do now have a new location to enter the festival. It's over by the box office at the north end of the building. And so that will be the one change from previous. And we'll have people out there to help guide people as if they come to where we've entered before.
Cool. Well, where can people get more information about Portland Audubon? Quinn, I'll ask you that.
Well, certainly check us out on our website, audubonportland.org. But I encourage you to sign up for our newsletters as well. If you're interested in our work, urban, statewide, or any of our wide variety of both adult and youth education programs, that's the best way to stay up to date. But I certainly, in my role, I'd be remiss if I didn't make a little plug for, please sign up for our advocacy mailing list, because we will keep you up to date about important issues for birds and other wildlife and critical habitat around the state and opportunities for you to get involved. So again, audubonportland.org is a great entry point for that. And do come up to the sanctuary.
Yeah,
take that walk around and get inspired.
It's very cool up there.
Yeah.
Awesome. You guys do such great work at Portland Audubon. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking today with Matthew Hushbeck, Assistant Director of Development, and Quinn Reed, Conservation Director at Portland Audubon.
If you'd like to hear this interview again, just search for Let's Talk Portland on the Odyssey app. Let's Talk Portland is an Odyssey Portland public affairs program.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.